Swimming in Olympic gold.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Scott Jagow. One of the wire services was able to arrange an interview today with Olympic champion Michael Phelps with help from one of his sponsors, Visa, which makes what he told Reuters sound a bit ironic. It's not about the money. But having won 8 gold medals in these summer games, Phelps can write his own ticket home. In fact, one sports marketing expert is quoted as saying, the Phelps name alone could literally be enough to launch an entire swimwear company. And then there's the agony of China's best-known hurdler. He's had to pull out of the games with an ankle injury. Marketplace's Scott Tong joins us from Beijing. Good day, Scott.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Good, thanks. So, Liu Sheng, golden boy in terms of marketing, how big has he been?
He is Michael Johnson, Carl Lewis, Mary Lou Retton big. Just to give you an idea of some of the companies that have latched themselves to him, Coca-Cola, Nike, Visa, Lenovo, the computer company. And what's interesting is an assortment of Chinese companies, including a cigarette maker. He does say that he's not a smoker. One marketing company estimates that $500 million has been spent marketing this guy in the last 2 years.
Well, now that he's pulled out, do they see him as damaged goods?
It depends who you ask. If you think about the Olympics as kind of the biggest moment for companies to associate themselves with Liu Sheng, who has a giant halo over his head, and suddenly that grandest moment for these companies has disappeared right now. So that is a big loss momentarily. Now, having said that, marketing types say a lot of these companies, especially the multinational companies, they plan to be in China for 100 years. But for now, certainly that image has been tarnished.
How much is at stake for some of these companies?
Well, if you look at Nike, there is a giant life-size figure of Liu Sheng at Nike's giant store in Shanghai. And Nike and Adidas are locked into this head-to-head battle in the China market. Each of those companies is going to open one store every day in China. And there is a huge amount at stake here for Chinese people who, after the Olympics, hopefully will be doing sports a lot more than they do now. Most Chinese right now, they kind of watch sports. And so the China market is this huge opportunity for the fastest growing large market in the world right now.
Marketplace's Scott Tong in Beijing. Thank you.
Okay, Bob. Nice to talk to you.
Wall Street is starting out the week cautiously. The Dow is up 10 points, a tenth of a percent. The S&P 500 is off a tiny fraction. The NASDAQ is down 4 points, just shy of 0.2%. You're listening to the Morning Report for Monday, the 18th of August at marketplace.org. Are you finding what you came here looking for? We hope so, because it seems economic news is harder to come by these days. A new study by the Pew Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism suggests the American media often don't pay as much attention to economic news as the American public might like. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
With a recession looming, volatile oil prices, and the financial markets in turmoil, the economy emerged as a major media story in 2008. But it's one that much of the media has a hard time covering, according to Mark Jerkowitz at the Pew Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism.
It's a complicated story. It's a multi-layered story. It's not necessarily an easy story to tell or follow.
And Jerkowitz said the media spent much of this year playing catch-up, with one exception.
Gas prices. There, if you plot it on a chart, if you plot gas prices and you plot media coverage, they move like two synchronized swimmers in the Olympics. You know, they are together. And it's easy to see why.
But Jerkowitz found editors and reporters are backing away from many more complicated economic stories. That means that even though the economy is issue number one in the eyes of the public, the press is devoting more than four times as much attention to the presidential election. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Over the past year, the price of commodities like oil, copper, and rice has nearly doubled. That's been largely fueled by demand from developing nations like China and India. Things have eased up a bit of late, but it's still boom time for commodities companies. Exxon recently reported the biggest profit in U.S. history. Today, BHP Billiton announced some mega earnings of its own, and now the world's largest mining company wants to get even bigger, as Stephen Beard reports.
BHP made almost $15.5 billion in the year to the end of June. The global slowdown doesn't worry the company. It believes there'll still be sufficient demand for raw materials in emerging markets. But there are questions about the company's $130 billion all-share bid for its rival, Rio Tinto. Some analysts say both companies are doing well enough on their own. They don't need to merge. Others argue that given BHP's strong earnings, Rio can demand a much better offer. David Hart is with research group Fat Profits.
Either the addition of a cash component or lifting that all-share offer is what's going to be necessary to win the day.
BHP also needs to win the approval of European antitrust regulators. Together, the two companies would control one-third of the world iron ore market. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The dollar was down a bit this morning and commodities have edged up. But there's one commodity that's performed consistently well for decades, Elvis. The annual nine-day celebration of the king in Memphis, Tennessee, better known as Elvis Week, is just wrapping up. It brought the city around $30 million last year, and Elvis is still Fortune magazine's richest deceased celebrity. But will the king's stock stay strong? As Rico Galliano reports.
Most kids have heard of the Beatles, but ask them who Eleanor Rigby is, and some of them might guess a first lady. So as baby boomers shuffle off this mortal coil, Elvis must also be enduring some erosion of brand recognition, right? Kevin Kern is spokesman for Elvis Enterprises.
Totally not the case. 600,000 people each year visit Graceland. 40% are 35 and under.
What keeps young people interested? Well, Disney helped. Their 2002 kids film Lilo and Stitch is about a little girl who discovers an Elvis-loving alien.
Want to listen to the king? You look like an Elvis fan.
And this year's Elvis Week featured the release of a toy that seems targeted at both boomers and kids, an Elvis and Priscilla Barbie doll set. At $65 a pop, they sold out in an hour and a half. So can anything stop the king? Well, Kern says even natural disasters are only a temporary setback on Graceland attendance.
There are things like the Katrina effect and that sort of thing, but, you know, Elvis always weathers the storm.
In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
You should have heard this knocked-out jailbird sing, "Let it rock, everybody, let it rock. Everybody in old sailboat was dancing to the tail out rock."
Tropical storm Fay is forecast to turn north, reach hurricane strength, and hit Florida later today. The Florida Keys began evacuating tourists yesterday. But the effect on tourism isn't the only concern. From the America's Desk at WLRN, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
Royal Dutch Shell and offshore driller Transocean have removed hundreds of workers from oil platforms in the Gulf of Mexico. Energy expert Jorge Piñon with the University of Miami says this is a precaution.
Most of the folks that are first evacuated are maintenance personnel and contractors that are not directly linked with the day-to-day operations of those production platforms in the Gulf of Mexico.
The energy firms say so far oil production has not been affected. Piñon says the story would be different if not for a moratorium on offshore drilling that includes the western coastline of Florida.
All of the activities in the Gulf Coast are in the Louisiana area, not off the coast of Florida.
The latest forecast has Fay making landfall in the Tampa Bay area Tuesday afternoon. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Concern over possible supply disruptions pushed oil prices back above $115 a barrel earlier today, although they've retreated a bit. With prices so high, drillers have been descending on farms in the Midwest to sink new wells. That's making some farmers rich, but it's also wrecking other farmers' lives. From Wyoming Public Radio, Peter O'Dowd reports.
Joanne Tweedy has that weather-beaten look you'd expect from a woman who's worked the land in Wyoming for 40 years. She stands on the stoop of her farmhouse south of Gillette and looks out across 4,600 acres. Under the clear blue skies sprinkled about the grasslands, a handful of pumps bob up and down, pulling oil out of the ground.
We're getting $100, $110, $115 a barrel, and doesn't take much of a good well to bring in some money.
Tweedy is lucky. She bought her ranch at a time when it came with the mineral rights attached. She owns not just the grassland above, but the oil beneath. That allows her to lease the land to oil companies. In return, she gets a 15% share of any oil they extract for the next 30 years. She just allowed one company to sink three new wells.
Just got them going good right at the beginning of spring.
220 miles to the west, near a speck of a town called Deaver, the air is heavy with the sour smell of oil. Doug and Jeannie McMullen raise goats here. They bought their ranch 5 years ago, but here the oil company owns the mineral rights. It has the power. It decides where to drill, when to drill. And what frustrates McMullen most of all is what to do with the byproducts that drilling produces.
The thing that provokes us is that the land cannot defend itself.
McMullen points out the damage that drilling has done to his 300-acre property. Two oil pumps go night and day. Corroded storage tanks leak sludge into the ground. McMullen picks up what looks like a clump of dirt and breaks it open. It's black inside.
This is oil.
He claims large parts of his ranch are unusable because of the oil spills, but he's never received a dime in compensation.
For those who are going to allow future drilling on their property, watch out. If you're just doing it for money, you're going to be sorry.
It's not just the foul air that sickens McMullen. It's the thought that drilling will never end. Glenn Morrell is an oil expert at the University of Wyoming. He says oil firms are upgrading old wells and preparing them for long-term use.
The companies who are financing all that drilling, they'll be looking at it not in terms of environmental concerns or not in terms of political concerns, but how much payback they're going to get.
And right now, that payback looks pretty good. The price of oil is fluctuating, but it's still twice what it was this time last year. And at that rate, Morrell says drillers will be around for at least a few more decades. In Laramie, Wyoming, I'm Peter O'Dowd for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. We invite your comments at marketplace.org. And thanks for joining us this morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.